Thank you, Ryan. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And we have Patrick McDonald in the studio, a film critic for HollywoodChicago.com. Patrick, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Nice
Thank
to see you.
It's great to see you.
I have a quick question I need to ask
you.
Last night I was watching Stephen Colbert's show, and he had Rob Lowe on, and they were talking about the Academy Awards.
Yes.
Did you see it by any chance?
I did.
All right.
I did.
So Rob Lowe, it's interesting that he would talk about the Academy Awards because he's responsible for what many consider to be the absolute worst Academy Awards of all time, when he and Snow White sang Tina Turner music.
God,
it was not pleasant.
Seen to be believed.
It's horrendous. And he knew it was horrendous.
Right.
All right. But this is the part I wanted to bring up.
Yes.
Stephen Colbert said, you know, you've had some association with the Academy in the past. They have changed a rule over at the Academy Awards this year where they're going to have a new category, not just Best Picture, but Best Popular Picture.
Yes.
Your thoughts on this? And Rob Lowe was against it, and I've been against it because I think it waters down the true best movie of the year. What do you think?
There was one point he made that I thought was very interesting, and Colbert kind of, you know, followed up with it, where he said, yeah, the movie you don't see is the best picture.
You know?
Boy, you know, this ABC is driving this because the ratings have just been plummeting. And I don't think there's been a consensus yet, number one. And number two, I think the public outcry has been mostly negative.
Good.
My feeling is keep it the way it is.
Yeah.
But if there is somehow they can move, there are other categories I think that they could celebrate popular films in. Best voiceover, for example, with all the animated.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know, best voiceover performance, best stunts.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, things, there are categories. I think there are categories that need to be eliminated within the show context, and I think they're working on that right now. But you know, the unions are pretty big there, and so if you take out, you know, best sound design, you know, the sound people are not going to be happy.
Right.
But I'm against it as well. But I also understand that there is a populist streak in film right now that is not being addressed in the Academy. So,
but isn't this their equivalent of a participation trophy? It kind of is, right? It's like everyone needs to win something. We've all worked so hard. But really, if you are the greatest film, and I look at last year, The Shape of Water won, and a lot of people are like, wait, I didn't even know that movie existed, and it won. So whose fault is that?
I don't know. I mean, you know, what is the philosophy of the Academy? I mean, I think that's what they have to look inward.
Mm-hmm.
What is our philosophy? What are we celebrating? Do we care about ratings?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it'll end up on the country music channel or something. You know, it's just something that they have to internally have to soul search about. And again, I am against it. So
a movie, just so I understand this, a movie can't be nominated in both categories, right? You can't be up for the best picture of the year and also most popular picture of the year.
I didn't see the breakdown, but yeah, I guess that would be part of it.
Sometimes a movie, didn't Titanic won, right?
Yes.
For best movie? All right.
Yes, it did.
So that was both considered to be the best movie of the year and the most popular.
Yes.
So it's possible you can do both.
Yes. It's very popular. Possible popularity.
Yep. All right.
Popping my peas.
I loved that movie, the Titanic.
Titanic was good. Don't say how it ended. Some people may not have seen it yet. I don't want to ruin it for anybody. All right. What are we looking forward to this weekend?
What are we looking forward to this weekend? Well, we have the new Jennifer Garner film, Peppermint, which I saw last night. And, you know, these are so formulaic now. These pictures, the revenge pictures, the family gets killed and somebody trains for years to get into Batman-esque shape to go and do her revenge on it. And I like Jennifer Garner and I think she's a pretty good actor, but I don't think she was right for the role, inevitably.
Who would you have given it to?
Well, you know, it's hard to say, you know, off the top of my head. Maybe Jennifer Lawrence was pretty good in that Red Sparrow.
Yeah.
I think she would have given it another spin.
But the early Jennifer Garner, the first Jennifer Garner that most of us knew was from Alias, which, and this is kind of a throwback to that kind of action adventure.
Good point. I'm not familiar with that show in the sense that I watched it.
Oh.
And, But right, she is used to that genre. I mean, it was a good performance, but I think, you know, the way her image has changed.
Yeah.
you know, one wag said was one of the victims Ben Affleck. So I don't know if that's part of it. But there were 36 quality kills in it.
Oh, there were? Wow. Did you count? Or did
I count them.
Oh, when, they did.
When it starts getting numerous, I'll go back and say, okay, there were six people at that table. Then I start to count. And it came out.
You don't do this out loud, do you?
No, okay, but I have it up. I when I hit the multiples, I start doing my finger on two. And there was the longest pause between 35 and 36. Oh. I said, who's going to be the 36th victim?
We need one more.
As the clock is running out, and finally came.
Yeah. So overall, you just weren't a fan of it.
2.5 out of 5.
Oh, that's not good enough.
Is Jennifer Garner a good actress?
I like her a lot. You're not a fan?
She's appealing.
You don't like her?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know that she's that great.
It's interesting that they're giving her this kind of franchise picture. I mean, it's obviously a franchise.
So this looks like the kind of thing that if it does well enough, we'll see.
Right.
We'll see her come back. And
it's open ended. Yeah,
get more revenge on more people.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
But you're right. Several times a year, more times than not, it's Liam Neeson.
Yes,
he's mad at a lot of people for things that they've done, and he goes and he gets them. But Samuel L. Jackson is always in these. Bruce Willis is always in these. It's a lot of revenge out there, Patrick.
A lot of revenge to be had.
All right. Why don't we do this? We'll take a quick break, and then we'll cover the rest of the movies that are coming out this weekend.
Awesome.
Patrick McDonald is here from HollywoodChicago.com. Tours are still going, right?
Still going. We're not running this weekend, but we will continue through the end of November. So it's been going okay this year. We've had a lot of potholes in the road, but we've overcome them. So come on in.
HollywoodChicago.com is the website. We'll be back after this. It's Bill and it's Wendy on WGN. Patrick McDonald is here. You know Patrick from being Patrick McDonald, mostly. He's also the film critic over at HollywoodChicago.com. Yep. All right. There's a movie that's coming out this weekend, and the preview for it was so scary that certain websites didn't want to show the trailer because people were seeing it and having heart attacks. They couldn't believe how frightening it was. It's called
Toughen
The Nun.
Up, people.
Come on. It's just a trailer.
Well, interestingly,
interestingly enough,
they showed both The Nun and Peppermint in preview at the same time last night.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
Oh.
So I did not see The Nun.
Oh.
But I do have background on The Nun.
What can you tell us?
It's part of the Conjuring universe.
Mm-hmm.
The Conjuring came out in 2013, and it's based on some real-life people who do the paranormal.
Scary nuns?
Scary nuns, Wendy. Yep.
No, the folks are Ed and Lorraine Warren, and they are real-life paranormal investigators.
Mm-hmm.
So James Wan and his production, he's the director, and his production crew put together The Conjuring.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it caused a sensation. So, of course, there's a Conjuring 2, but these people had a foresight to say, well, if people are coming out for this legend, let's break it down.
Yeah.
So Annabelle was the doll in the film. So Annabelle
was that a prequel, though, or was that
sequence? It was sort of a prequel, but it dovetailed with the story of The Conjuring.
Yeah.
And then Annabelle Creation was the actual prequel, which recently came out. Now, there's going to be an Annabelle 3.
Yeah.
And The Nun is part of The Conjuring universe.
Yeah.
So they're breaking off that story. And get this, this has made $1.2 billion worldwide.
The Conjuring movies.
The Conjuring universe.
Yeah.
Wow.
So you have to think that these production people have made hundreds of millions of dollars on this franchise.
Sure.
And it's quite remarkable.
A couple questions. Question number one. Wendy, I can't speak for you, but I have never seen any of the Conjuring movies. The ads always look very scary, and I want to see them, but I have not seen them. Can I go and see The Nun without seeing the other movies in the Conjuring series?
You
want to go see The Nun?
I do want to see The Nun, and I want to see it with a nun. I'm going to bring Sister Janet from St. Damien's School, and the two of us are going to see it together and enjoy Mike and Ike's during the movie.
Oh, my God.
Is it possible,
you might
though?
Get to heaven after
I'm
all.
Going to heaven, Wendy.
I'm going to bring Sister Jean.
Sister Jean from Loyola? All right. So is it possible? Will I understand what I'm seeing, or will it just be foreign to me because I didn't see the other Conjuring movies?
I didn't see The Nun, so I wouldn't know. I would say that I would say pick up The Conjuring because that gives you the idea of the universe.
Right.
So if you have an idea of the universe, you can see the other films.
If I saw The Singing Nun, could I still enjoy The Nun?
The great Debbie Reynolds.
She was so good, wasn't she?
Yes, she was.
Yeah.
You know, Ed Sullivan made a cameo in that.
Yeah, he did. He was great in that. I mean, all I've seen is the preview, and they did. You've seen the same preview I have, right?
Yes.
Where it's a young nun, and she's walking down in like the catacombs of a church, and you see a scary nun behind her, an older nun.
Yes.
So you're watching that nun, but then a third nun, a monster nun, comes running out of the side and knocks him down. That's good because it's misdirection because you're looking at the old nun instead
three nuns
of
walk into
three nuns walk into a catacomb.
I would recommend that nobody who went to Catholic school before Vatican II see this film.
That's good advice.
Their cardiologist.
That's solid advice. So would you agree with me? This is one of those movies that honestly can't miss, right?
Well, obviously, because they keep making them in this universe.
I
1.2 billion is nothing to sneeze at, my friend.
You're going to get
carte blanche from New Line Cinema to do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And they've got these planned out like the Marvel Universe and the DC Universe. And so every film now will be part of a universe.
Right.
The Jennifer Garner universe.
Are there any minions in this?
Possibly.
I want to see minions.
Possibly.
All right. What about this? Warren Beatty is finally back on the screen.
Yes.
We have not seen a Warren Beatty movie in a little while. What's Warren Beatty doing?
Well, he was the pallbearer at John McCain's funeral.
I saw him for that.
And
how are they friends?
I can't figure it out either, but they showed Warren Beatty and his wife Annette Bening were kind of front and center through some of the ceremony. I don't know how they knew each other, do you?
Warren's a political junkie, and I think just in his travels he met John McCain. Now, why those two would hook up, I don't know, because Warren's very, very progressive.
Yeah.
And I would think that they met at a friendship level rather than a political level, obviously. But Beatty's always been interested in the machinations of government, and nobody was into that than John McCain, I think. So they got together. Hmm. And what's the new Warren Beatty film, sir? I didn't look that up before I came.
All I know is that it's Warren Beatty and Robert Klein, and he is, in my opinion, seriously, Patrick, the most underrated stand-up comic of all time.
Well, you're leading into my story then. There's not a film version of this, but
what is it?
Here's what happened.
What?
When the 50th anniversary of the police riots in the Democratic National Convention occurred last week, August 28th.
Yeah.
I remembered that I had interviewed both Robert Klein and Warren Beatty, and they both told me a story about that particular night. So Beatty's story is great because he was going to visit Hubert Humphrey at the Hilton because he was going to make a campaign film for him, and he got caught behind the barriers and gassed. So
oh my
Warren
God.
Beatty was tear gassed that night. Now, Klein's story is a little less involved, but it's still interesting. Klein was in town because, remember, he was part of the Second City.
Yeah, right.
And the Second City was doing a review out at Ravinia, so, sort of a greatest hits thing.
Yeah.
Klein was involved. He said that was the first time he ever met Peter Boyle, and they became lifelong friends.
Mm-hmm.
And he said Boyle and him and Barbara's bookshop back in the old town days. I don't remember her name, but she was in the coterie having dinner in Old Town. They walk out, and they're gassed because all the gas had flown all through the city. And the thing about Robert Klein, and I agree, he's incredibly underrated. He's a genius.
Yeah.
And the interview he has with me is as funny as one of his stand-ups.
Is he? Yeah.
He's just a naturally funny guy.
Yeah.
And the thing about him is he said, Chicago for me was like Hemingway's Movable Feast in Paris because I met everybody. I saw everybody. You know, he's talking about Dick Gregory.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just, he said, I said, you should write a book about that. He goes, yes, I should.
I hope he does.
I hope he does. It would be interesting to read about Chicago back then in the era of the early days of the Second City, where everything was possible and everybody was on the streets.
So this would have been late 1960s, obviously.
Yes,
this
is 1968. And Klein was there at the Second City for 1 year in 1966.
Yeah.
He said, I'm a New York boy through and through. through. But Chicago has its own grit, its own identity, and its own way of doing things.
For a while, he's working alongside David Steinberg, who, again, is one of my favorite all-time comics. However, the two of them did not get along.
Okay.
Which is sad.
I can see Klein not getting along with
a lot of people. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He has a pretty big ego.
Speaking of not getting along, a quick take on William Shatner.
Yes.
He's got a new book out where he doesn't understand why the other cast of Star Trek didn't like him, right?
Yes,
I thought he and Leonard Nimoy, or Nimoy, were friends.
They were.
I know they had a falling out, but I thought that they got back together prior to Leonard's death.
No.
In fact, they had the ultimate falling out right before his death.
That sucks.
I think it had to do with the reboot, quite frankly, because, you know, Nimoy was in the reboot and Shatner wasn't, and Shatner really wanted to be in the reboot.
Yeah.
But they wrote that small part that he was going to do out of the reboot. And maybe Leonard recommended that. I don't know.
Oh.
But he refused to take a call from him the last, you know, 5 years of his life. And they were born 4 days apart. They were both raised in Orthodox Jewish homes.
Yeah.
You couldn't get more commonality than that.
Right.
But maybe that's the point. You know, that's too much commonality. I don't know.
But he maintains, like, over the years, if you asked any of the other cast of Star Trek what it was like working with Shatner, they will tell you it was not pleasant.
No.
But then he says in the book, he goes, "Boy, this is news to me. I don't know what the beef is with me. I like those guys. I don't know why they don't like me."
I think William Shatner is a separate entity on himself. I saw him at a Comic-Con once. It was a huge room, thousands of people lined up to ask him questions. He had a 40-minute slot. He spent 35 minutes telling random stories about nothing.
Yeah.
Just so he wouldn't have to answer the questions of the Trek people.
Right. Because he's tired of the same five questions all the time.
That was the best SNL bit ever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It really was. Go home.
Get out of your parents' basement.
The only time I've ever gotten to interview him, and he's one of those guys that before you interview, everybody warns you, just so you know in advance, this isn't going to go well because he doesn't like doing these and he's mean to people. And he was so incredibly nice to me. It's happened a couple times. It happened with Jerry Lewis, where I was expecting the worst. But Shatner he wouldn't stop. Like, I kept closing the interview off, and he goes, no, let's do more. I want to talk more. What happened?
I think as an interviewer myself, you have to have a certain level of respect for these people.
Yeah.
And they can detect it.
Yeah.
They can detect, like Warren Beatty. I was warned about Warren Beatty. I went to his Q&A the night before. I said, I see how he answers questions. I went in there and I wrote my questions based on how he answered questions. I have them in the palm of my hand. Because you have to have a certain level of respect. You cannot waste people's time. And you have to connect with them on a human basis. Well, and you're a very human guy.
Well, with Shatner, he had done it. Remember a show called Barbary Coast with Doug McClure?
Yeah.
He was on it for 1 year. It wasn't very good. So when I had him on, I said, I'm going to ask you all the questions you get asked forever. What was it like working with Doug McClure on Barbary Coast? And he just kept laughing. And he goes, really? And I go, yeah, let's talk about that. So we did a bunch of Barbary.
That's exactly the type of question you open with.
Yeah, I guess.
For a long time.
It's different, you know, especially sick of hearing the same questions.
Yeah,
but that's what's so difficult is coming up with a question that these people haven't been asked before. It's sometimes really tough to do.
Yeah.
I'm putting a challenge out to the universe. My top interview is Paul McCartney.
Hmm.
He has a new album coming out. And the publicist, if you're out there,
you want to talk
to him. I will write five questions I guarantee he has never heard before.
What it's called, like... F.U. or something like that.
Is it really?
One of the songs. I like it. It's kind of poppy and, you know.
Sure.
I really enjoy it.
Hmm.
So I hope you get to do that.
That'd be fun, wouldn't it?
He's still on top, man.
Yeah. Patrick McDonald is his name. HollywoodChicago.com is the website. Visit HollywoodChicago.com. It's right there on your internet.
And you had something you wanted to promote,
yes,
Patrick?
Yes, quickly. I'm going to appear with Women in Film Chicago, their Power Breakfast Giving and Receiving Feedback. And that will be it.
That was a demonic laugh, Patrick.
That was.
That will be a noise floor post production on 308 West Erie. They have a link online to a you can get tickets. And then Sunday, 5 p.m., right before the Bears game, so you can get and see the Bears game. I'll be at Gene Siskel Film Center, 164 North State. I will be moderating a discussion of the great film, Minding the Gap, with director Bing Liu and executive director Gordon Quinn, the Quinn in Cartem Quinn. It's like meeting Louis B. Mayer.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Where do we find out all this information?
Because Gene Siskel website, Gene Siskel Film Center.org, probably. And then, of course, Eventbrite, where just type in the Google Eventbrite Power Breakfast.
Thanks, Patrick.
Women in Film Chicago.
Steve Bertrand's Super. Coming up next.
That's right. Coming up, the stories that matter with Kim Gordon from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. It's all happening on WGN Radio.